Hello. Welcome back to All My Relations. Tiguiti, thank you for joining us. It's such an honor to get to share space with y'all. Today, we have our last live episode from our Santa Monica College event.
Yes, we're so excited to share our conversation with Sierra Ornelas, Janice Schmieding, and Tazwa Chavez, three incredible Native women in Hollywood.
Yes, they're so awesome. They're all part of the team that brought us Rutherford Falls, which is a sitcom on Peacock that has two seasons, and the show tells the story of a small town in upstate New York grappling with its history and identity, and it features many Native characters. And for me, it was so exciting when it came out on TV. I've wanted my entire life to watch a comedy with Native women in it, written by Native women. I just can't get over how cool it is. And I remember the premiere, I actually was crying like happy tears. So I feel incredibly excited to be sharing this story with y'all.
Yeah, it was such a huge moment for representation and meant so much for so many of us. And I am so happy that we get to talk with them today. And it is such a fun conversation. We get to hear about their sisterhood and how they're trying to do things differently. And we get to talk about how effing funny Native women are. It's awesome. I love it.
Because we are funny. I just want you to know we're super funny. And I realize that maybe the title of this episode is not the most clever, but it really actually needs to be said because Native women are super funny, and you're going to hear that in this episode. I mean, I'm sure you already know we're funny. If not, you're probably just already laughing at me, but you know, either way, it's a real honor to share this story with you. So enjoy.
Sorry. All my relations.
Hello, relatives. I'm Matika Wilbur, and I'm from the Suwannomish and Tulalip tribes. I just want to say Tiguitsit Siayas, Nestralachad Siayas. Thank you, relatives, for being here today. Sincerest gratitude to KP for opening up for us today. Tiguitsi, thank you. And I want to welcome all of you to this episode, this podcast recording called Native Women Are Funny.
To the point.
Straight. Cue laughter.
Colon duh.
Subtitled
duh. It was really, I put a lot of thought into the episode title. I just wanted you to know that's some of my best work, Sierra. And we're going to introduce our fine guest here in a second, but I'll let Adria go ahead and introduce herself.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Adrian Keene and I'm a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. I'm originally from Southern California, so I grew up in San Diego, and now I live in Rhode Island, where I'm a faculty member, and I also am a writer, blogger, and co-host of this podcast with Matika.
Mm-hmm. For today's episode, we have three guests joining us: Tazwa Rose Chavez. Hi, Tazwa.
Hello, Manu.
Sierra Teller Ornelas, and Janice Meeting. We're big fans. And we're very excited to have you with us. And before we get started, I'm just going to read for you their bios and welcome them in that formal good way, you know. Tazwa is a citizen of the Bishop Paiute tribe from the Numu, Diné, and San Carlos Apache tribes. She is a performance poet turned director and television writer. She is known for her work as a writer and director for her film Your Name Isn't English, and as a writer and director for Reservation Dogs and Rutherford Falls. In addition, she was a writer on Sci-Fi Network's Resident Alien, directed on HBO Max's Sex Lives of College Girls, and wrote and directed on Fox's upcoming series, Accused. Welcome, Tazwa.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see all of you.
Sierra is a member of the Navajo Nation and is the co-creator, showrunner, writer, and executive producer for Rutherford Falls, and is an award-winning sixth-generation Navajo tapestry weaver as well. She has previously staffed on many, many TV shows, including Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Superstore, Happy Endings, and Splitting Up Together. A graduate of the University of Arizona, her work has been featured on This American Life, in the New York Times opinion section, and as a film programmer for the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian.
Hey.
Can I do my clans real quick? My name is Sierra Tella Ornelas. I am a member of the Navajo Nation. I am Edgewater, born for the Mexican people. And thank you so much for having us here today.
And thank you so much for being here today.
Janish Meeting is Minikanju and Shikanju Lakota, an actor, a writer, a director, a podcaster, and a comedian. Formerly a public school teacher in New York City, she moved to L.A. to further pursue a career in television. Janice studied theater arts at the University of Oregon and got her master's in teaching from Mercy College in New York. She is best known for her work as a writer, actor on Rutherford Falls, an actor in Reservation Dogs, and voice acting for Spirit Rangers.
Not best known for that, but it is something that I'm proud of.
Soon. They haven't heard it yet.
Yes, it hasn't been released. So,
do you want to introduce yourself at all? Tazba down there. Do you want to say hello before we...
No, because it will not... It will pale in comparison of Sierra's introduction.
Yeah, nobody can sound that.
We just let her have it, and then you just got to figure out
But
who
when I'm amongst my... Like, you are Navajo, but other Navajos as well, and mine sounds like a baby talking. So it's also, like, if I'm with my mom, I sound like an idiot.
Yeah, should we have a Navajo off?
Oh. No, because she would win, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's when you get three or more Navajos. This turns into a Navajo off. Okay. That's the rules.
Well, the title of this episode is called Native Women Are Funny. Would you like to be funny for us?
This is like the worst improv nightmare ever.
I know. Tell a joke right now.
Be funny.
Okay, moving on.
No. So I'll say, though, I feel like, you know, obviously in all media, but even within, like, the Native comedy scene, you know, it's very rare that women are elevated or focused on. So this is, like, such a cool opportunity to, like, have a conversation with other, like, funny Native women. We've had them on set, and we've had them, like, in different other situations. But this is, like, such a fun opportunity. What I said was not funny, but it was true. So that's
But do you feel like in the entertainment industry that statement of, like, Native women are funny is somehow controversial? Is it, like, something that you are trying to make sure people know about? Like, what's your response when you hear that phrase, Native women are funny?
I feel like we don't really hear it. And I think, I don't think it's controversial because it's a fact. but I don't think that it's elevated the same way as maybe some of our counterparts are. And I think that Native women are a big part of the success of a lot of things that we have seen come out in Native comedy. And these ladies and, you know, myself included, have been a big part of that. And so it is really exciting to be able to talk about that today a little bit more because, you know, I was telling them back in, is that a green room?
Sure.
Okay.
It's kind of really a fancy closet. It's a green room.
It's like a closet.
Fancy closet.
No, just that I think that Native women are funny. And I think if you were to ask anybody in a Native community, that's a duh. Like, our aunties, our grandmas, our moms, our cousins, our sisters are some of the funniest, raunchiest, dirtiest, wittiest, best shit talking people that I've ever met.
And I think you learned that from your aunties and your grandma. Like, I remember my grandma making, like, a super dark joke and being like, like, it was almost painful. But it was so funny. And I was like, God, I just want to be this woman. Like, go just, like, be at church and, like, telling people off and stuff. And, like, I do think, like, there's so much stuff that's, like, passed down that we talk about in terms of, like, art or storytelling. But I do think that humor, you get that from your mom first because you probably spend the most time with them first. Mm-hmm. And then it's, like, it is weirdly ingrained and rewarded. Like, I always was rewarded for being funny and I could get out of trouble. I could get out of responsibilities. And so it was one of those weird things where, like, my mom is a master Navajo weaver. And so she has, like, no coworkers. She just sits and weaves for, like, 10-hour stretches. And so most of my life was like, da-da-da-da-da-da, like by the loom trying to be entertaining and funny or, like, reenacting old stand-up bits I watch just to kind of keep her entertained. And I do think it's weirdly, like, it's embedded in the culture, even though we don't really, like, think about it.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, practicing comedy in New York, especially, like,
coming up in a comedy scene that was specifically for comedians, I really didn't talk about my indigeneity that much at all because I didn't trust the literacy of non-native people to understand my jokes. So being in a space like this and being in like, you know, being elevated by Sierra in Rutherford Falls and being able to shine on Res Dogs is like, it's the dream. You know, it's like to be funny for your own people is like a totally different level of comedy that I really never expected to have a chance to do. And so it also speaks to, you know, the degree with which I think Native comedians have to code switch. Mm-hmm. If we want to excel in comedy specifically, we have to be able to speak to a larger audience, or we have to make our Native specific jokes relative to a larger audience and bring them in. And there's a lot of, like, as we know as Native people, there's a lot of education that you have to do before you can let people in on the joke. And that's the unfortunate reality of being a Native woman. I mean, aside from the regular sexism that happens in comedy, there is like a largely a narrative that women aren't funny in comedy that is still persists. But I think that we are like really breaking down those boundaries, and we're doing it together, and we're doing it with an audience that is with us as well. And I think that that's like super important and challenging.
I've certainly tried to be raunchy in all white rooms and it's not gone well. You know, like I've had to learn like the code switching you're talking about, you know, or like when I try to be like, A's, you know, and people don't laugh, you know, they don't do that with you. No. And so, yeah, you have to learn how to switch the jokes up.
Yeah. White people aren't funny. So sorry, but it's a sad fact. And I'm so sorry for you, those of you who suffer with
that. I'm with you on that one, yeah. Go ahead, Adrian.
So, Sierra. Yeah. No, but I am really curious because you are the first Native showrunner of a comedy ever. Is that correct? Like, that is wild to me. And so thinking about, like, I just am so curious about this process of like, so you have the show is greenlit. Is that the terminology? It's there. It's happening. And now you have this opportunity to create your cast and your writer's room and the people behind the camera and bring so many people up with you in that process. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what was that like? How did you make those choices? What is it like to build out a Native TV show with Native people involved?
Totally. I mean, I will say Sterling was like 3 months later. So it was like Charisse and Deb. It was like technically one was first. But it was great to have that because at the time we were developing Rutherford Falls, he was developing Reservation Dogs. And it was like, if my show goes, I'll hire you. If your show goes, I'll hire you. You know, and there was like this camaraderie that was there. That was so, I mean, it's how I met Tazba, you know, was Sterling being like, you should hire her, blah, blah, blah. And so before the show got greenlit, there was like a year of development. And that to me was where a lot of the foundation of the show came in, where when the show initially was an idea between Mike Sherna Helms, two very funny white people, Jana, who were your co-workers.
Yeah, agree to disagree.
No, but they'd be the first to say they weren't funny. So no, and at the time, you know, the main character, Nathan's best friend, I think was like going to be potentially Asian. We knew she was a woman. And there was like one character, it was the Terry Thomas character. And he was a little bit more, I think, like the casino owner on Parks and Rec, you know. Mm. And it was just, again, like that literacy thing. And I had worked in museums for many years. I had, you know, known a lot of these characters. And I was like, oh, his best friend should be Native. She should also love museums. I just started pitching this version of Regan, which was basically me, which is what all writers do. And talking about that, because I think coming up in comedy that is mostly white spaces, you have these dudes who you're such good friends with and there's such a blind spot for how they see you or how they relate to you. But you also have this really great shared language of comedy. And if you kind of like switch that to just museums, they loved it. They were like, that's great. Let's do all of those things instead of one Native character. Let's have a bajillion Native characters. So it was just a great opportunity to really be equal with them through the whole process. And then once it happened, it was kind of like, Ocean's 11 putting a bank robbery team together. Like, okay, I knew, like, working in comedy, I knew, like, I needed joke people. I knew I needed story people. I knew I needed people who had interesting backgrounds, people who were loud, people who were quiet. And but then I got to do the native version of that. And it was just, like, one of those things where it was, like, because you were the boss, you could just decide. Mm-hmm. You know, I was on Jana's podcast and was like, oh, do you have a sample? I think you're funny. I love your point of view. And we had this, like, shared language of comedy. It was so neat to be with another native woman who had grown up on SNL and had grown up on all these like reference points, but also had those anti jokes and had all of the same sort of native references. And that was the first germ of like, oh, this feels really good. It was like meeting and interviewing Tazba and meeting Jana of being like, oh, this feels so special and specific. And so it was just chasing that feeling, whether it was on set and Tazba was directing, whether like Jana was improvising on, you know, during a scene. It was like just chasing that feeling, basically.
I love that so much.
And Jana and Tazba, what was it like to come into that environment, into a show that had that as the foundation compared to, I'm sure you've worked on all these other places. What was that like to come into Rutherford Falls?
Well, for me, it was amazing. It was my first job in television. So I was about to leave Hollywood forever when Sierra asked me to, or hired me, essentially, because it's very frustrating as a comedy writer to try to get into a room, especially as a non-white comedy writer, and especially somebody who is writing about, you know, in your writing samples, you're writing Native women leads. The industry doesn't know what it doesn't know, and so they don't know to hire you. And I was also just kind of green, so it was an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, for me, Rutherford Falls was actually the first time I had Native coworkers, which is kind of crazy. And I remember walking into the room the first day that it was everybody, and to see Jana and Bobby and Sierra and an assistant, Caitlin, and Ty. And that was like kind of a big deal that it would take getting to staff on a TV show to have Native coworkers. And also, you know, I had staffed on Resident Alien previously, so this is my second show. And for me anyway, getting the second thing is a really big deal for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you could get the first thing, but Sierra gave me the second thing, which really solidified this is a working TV writer that you should hire, that can learn, that can do this. And then also, Sierra was the second person who affirmed that I was funny, because that wasn't what I was hired for initially for her show or the previous show. But in these spaces is where I learned that Native women are funny and that I was one of them. And so, you know, now I've gone on to be able to direct for other comedies that are not Native. And so that was a really big boost in my potential that I think that you gave to me, but you also gave to all of the writers that you brought on. So I feel like Sierra deserves all the flowers, because she really like has brought a lot of us up. And I think one thing that she's great at too in this space is really making sure that we know what our worth is.
Thank you so much. You're gonna make me cry on Native American Heritage Month. Thank you.
Not tears on Native American Heritage Month.
Tears in November. Oh, no. Those tears cost more.
I know. Notice we're all like dressed in this like black like mourning like outfit for this celebratory month that we have going on.
We are
on
giving
as well.
Practical magic. Yeah, the coven.
That's actually a really good segue. Thank you, Tazba. Because I'm really curious about this sisterhood, you know, and the sisterhood that's happening for you in this environment in Hollywood, in a place that doesn't feel like it's built on relationality. You know, our podcast is called All My Relations. I think it's a fundamental belief system in Indian country. Certainly for me, where I come from in my community, I'm trying to learn about what it means to be a good relative to community, to my aunties, to my ancestors, to the land, you know. But you guys are actually making that happen amongst one another in your sisterhood. So how have you been able to carve out this new pathway? And what has it been to have each other in that process?
I think that comedy is very conducive to collaboration and community. I came up in like an improv comedy, sketch comedy environment in New York, and it's almost cult-like. So that's like what I love about comedy, is working with other people. But television specifically like relies on community and like and healthy community, mm-hmm. and people genuinely vibing off each other and thinking each other is funny and building upon each other's jokes and creating something together in the writer's room and in the production. It feels like community. It was very special and unique, and Native people have real skill to bring to this industry for that exact reason, that like we are good at this stuff because we know how to collaborate. We know how to work together. We know how to support each other. We know how to build upon each other's ideas. We are inventive. We are, you know, community oriented. We love each other. We care about each other. We care about resources. We care about each other's time. And we come from a level of excitement that people who are privileged enough to walk into this industry do not have. An enthusiasm and a readiness that people who are just stepping into it because they can do not have. So I think that we are like really good at it. Naturally, it's not something we have to really try hard at. And I'm sure that that will change and shift and evolve, of course. But I think that Sierra has been really intentional about setting that tone. Mm. And the more that we walk with that intention, the same relationality that we carry throughout our lives with our family and our community and the land, we can bring that into our working lives as well. Now, are we the only ones that know how to do that? I don't think so. But like, I do think that like it's something that isn't necessarily celebrated widely. But if we can celebrate that and continue to talk about it and, you know, just uplift each other, then I think that we will be okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a dynamic shift because like at home on my res, like it's, there's not, I wouldn't say that I like find the sisterhood really easily, you know, on the res. I don't know about you guys, but I don't like find it. It's not always there for me, you know? So I think finding a sisterhood and a working relationship like this is a creative reimagination for us to think about the way that we can move forward in business, in life, and, you know, like in our personal ways of being. So I really appreciate seeing you model that because I think it's like, it gives me something to aspire to and to hope for and to dream to like be able to have a collaboration that feels like it's rooted in uplifting each other, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's also, you know, it's so necessary for us because there's not a lot of us, mm-hmm. and especially at the time of Rutherford Falls, like season one. And so there weren't a lot of other people to relate to during that time mm-hmm. or to understand what you're going through, understand what our work days or production days or all of that. And so I think we do what Native people do, which is like we stick together through very hard times. COVID was the hard time, not the show. But, you know, it was new for me. It was like I was so happy to be able to have both of them on call no matter what, whether it was like, I mean, work stuff, but also just personal stuff. And the time we were going through was really crazy with, you know, one day we just left the room and like never went back. I'm just thankful for the friendships I continue to have after the show. Also.
Truly, truly. And I'm grateful to you guys. Like, I feel like I remember we were talking about like what's going to happen, like specifically like Native women in comedy. And I remember Jana saying Native women have led in all of these different arenas. If you look at the fashion, if you look at art, if you look at politics, it is these like little, I hate the word coven because I think like witch culture is getting weirdly appropriate by white people, but I think like
sure
by white ladies, but I think like these sort of like consortium of women have really like, I remember seeing like Deb save her seat with a Pendleton.
Yes.
And then like Charisse was there and the way they hugged and I was like, thank God they have each other. Like, thank God those two ladies are there together. And then finding out, of course, there's a whole ecosystem of like Native people in DC who are these power brokers who are helping them and lifting them up. And I feel like you kind of really expressing that's what we're going to do here. And I was like, I didn't even have that kind of dream, but you saying it made me have that dream. It's a small thing, but I remember, like, we hired Bobby to paint a mural, these, like, giant pieces of paper, because I wanted the office to have, like, a bunch of Native art when people walked in, just so they'd feel welcome. But also, I was like, I want Bobby to, like, walk around Paramount, because he was the only one who was from out of town. So he would have, like, an extra, like, 3 or 4 days to kind of, like, get his bearings. And he was like, I'm so glad you did this, because he's like, I got to make art where I feel confident in this space. And then once the other Native writer showed up, he was like, this is where the bathroom is. This is where the, and he was like the mayor of Paramount. Like, he like befriended the security guards and stuff. But like, and I don't, it's not like a brag, but it is the intentionality of like, because I was that staff writer, it was like, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. And I just didn't want that for the people I was hiring, especially like the Native writers. And it's like the ripple of like, I know when you guys have shows, you're going to do it in your own way and you're going to find that way way to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, it's a good feeling. It's a cool feeling. Mm.
And I do feel like that's so contrary to at least the way Hollywood is presented as like, it's like a, it's not the, you make the ground easier for those coming after you, you know, you pull up people after you. It's much, it feels like it's such a like singular individual focus kind of thing. And to hear like that groundwork being laid so intentionally is just absolutely beautiful, thinking of not only what it does to change the experience for Native people in the industry, but for everyone. Like everyone who works on your shows benefits from that intentionality and that relationship and everything. And that's like, it's how we change the world. Like that's amazing. So I love that.
Thank you. I will say too, like as toxic as this industry is and as hard as it can be, I have had really great like teachers and mentors. The stuff I'm pulling from are from people who are non-Native. But I also think like the more people who follow this kind of way of being, whether they're Native or not, the more it's demanded. Like, yeah. I think now, like, you were a good person for doing this 5 years ago, and now your staff will not put up with less than this, yes. You know? And so I do think there's, like, a shift happening. It just has to happen in that way. But, yeah, it was rough. 10 years ago, it was really, really rough, and it's gotten progressively easier depending on the room. It really is the showrunner that, like, sets the mm-hmm. tone, and there are still those monsters out there. But I also think there's a lot of people who are like, why are we doing it this way? Why are we bullying people, you know, mm-hmm. and trying to find that kind of that path for themselves. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to take a short break. KP's going to sing some music, make some music, make some music for us, and we'll be back with much more exciting, funny topics.
Recording?
Yes.
Okay. That was one of my favorite moments of season two, though, was it was your episode, Adirondack season three, where you Regan comes back home and realizes she wants Nelson, played by Dallas Goldtooth, and she ends up watching a clip of Charisse Davis, and we got her to play herself. And then there was like a flirty moment between the two of you and our editor, who I love, but he'll do this thing where he'll sneakily just pitch songs. And he's like, it's really good, right? And usually they're great. But I was like, it has to be a Native song. And he was like, what? And it cut together so well. And he was like, okay. He's like, I can do this. And he went and he found one of your songs, Black Black Eagle Scout. And we ended up using one of your songs for the end. And I was like, this is a perfect scene. It's like Native music, Native everything. It was
Native
it was
makeout. Like,
Native makeout. It was great.
Your fave.
I do love a Native rom-com. That's my dream. It's just more Native rom-coms.
Yeah, Natives making out.
More.
Well, that was the thing. Remember, Tazma, when we were doing the Land Back episode, You just kept yelling, we never get this.
Yeah.
You're like, we never get this. And we kept doing our impression of like what Native romance usually is in movies, where he has PTSD and she like owns a truck stop and like they have like, you know, they touch hands at the end of the movie and that's it or something. Yeah. It's just like, and then he goes to jail or whatever. And then they both get diabetes or whatever. Like that kind of movie. It just is always so depressing, but we never get like two Natives in a coffee shop talking about Halloween or whatever. And it was so nice to like have that finally.
Yeah, I remember filming that and we were at the monitors. And we just kept looking at each other like, oh my God, we never get to see romantic comedies of Native people. Like, we never seen him just gently touch her face before. Like, we've never seen people just like stare at each other like this. It was like, it was awesome. It was cool.
Yeah. That like tenderness was so cool.
It was
like,
the tenderness, I think, that was
conjure up.
I want to, before we wrap up at the end, I want to come back to this idea of like dream projects, like things you want to work on. So like hold that in your brain. But I we keep talking about like the room and like the writer's room and what that is. And I'm super curious if like, because all of us have watched TV shows, but none of us have ever been in that space of where a TV show is made. And if you could just kind of share with us what a writer's room is like what you do, and then maybe like what the difference has been to have a native presence in a writer's room versus not. As someone who's curious about maybe writing for TV at some point, maybe in my life, maybe, I would be super curious to hear what that's like.
Okay, well, the first hour is gossip. Okay, you come in, you get your snacks from the snack room, and then you sit down and you go through celebrity gossip. In our cases, sometimes it was native gossip. I'll be honest. Yes. Always staying abreast of the native gossip.
Always good.
a little bit more gossip if the room provides. Then you do some writing, and then you break for an hour-long lunch, and you eat together, and then you come back and you do some more writing, maybe. But then there's, like, of course, some goss to cap it off at the end of the day as well.
Sounds productive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super productive, yeah. And then the last hour, you buckle down and like...
Yeah, you for 45 minutes in the last hour, you're just like, and then they... They lean in and they kiss, but then they're like, oh, I can't do that. And then you go home.
And then you cry later when you're like, I don't actually know what this scene is about, and I'm trying to write it.
Yeah. Good luck.
Okay, so let's go back to the dreams. And I'm going to put this into two questions because this is going to be our last one. So I would like you to talk a bit about your dreams. Who would you cast, or if you could create a dream role for yourself, Jana, what would that be specifically? And then what's next for all of you? Any secret projects you can share with this beautiful audience here?
And the however many people listen to this podcast. But yeah, what's next? What are your dreams, hopes, visions?
Well, I personally feel like I have checked off a lot of dreams in the last couple of years. Like, I got to be a lead on a comedy, on a sitcom, which is a dream that I truly never thought would come true. It has been a dream come true for me. The entire process has been a damn dream. And then getting to do like a deep character role on Res Dogs, where, you know, I'm just so far away from who I actually am on that. Well, so far away. It's definitely a part of me that is Bev. But to be able to do, you know, sort of bright and dark is like the dream for me. And it's what I've always been practicing in live comedy is like character stuff, heavy character stuff. So,
can I compliment you?
I don't know.
All right. I don't want to interrupt you. I don't want to interrupt your dream.
Sure. But... As she does.
Well, it really just, I just want to underline how incredible performer that Jana is. That in comedy, especially, mostly people are leading ladies or they're character actors. So you have these like breakout funny people where they come in, they do their jokes, they just like kill you with comedy and then they leave. Or there's people who have dramatic range where they can make you cry and they make, you know, emotionally want to root for them. And it's very rare that a comedic actor performer has both of those things. And oftentimes you write the role for what the actor's strengths are. And when we cast Jana, who had never really been on TV before in the capacity that she was, like even if you look at someone like Aziz Ansari, who was in, you know, Master of None, he had done like 100 episodes of Parks and Rec before he was like the lead in something. She had to be like the mentee to Terry Thomas. She had to be best friends with Ed and do all these like emotional scenes. And then she had to have a full romance like with two different actors and then be super duper funny, depicting Native women in a way that they had never been depicted before. And she did all of them with like, and like it was nothing. And then she goes and does Res Dogs where she's like this like breakout character. People were dressed like her for Halloween. She's like huge laughs in a show that tonally has like a lot of these dramatic moments. And so I just want to say what you have accomplished is truly incredible. Like whatever your dreams are, like you will get to do them because you are so talented.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot to me because performing is my first love, you know, and I want to be, you know, good at writing too. And I want to try all the things. I think that's my dream is like, I want to try all the things. as a comedy person, I've done all of the comedies, you know, improv comedy, sketch comedy, solo comedy, stand-up. I tried podcasting when I moved to LA, and I've done web series and you know, all of the like independent stuff that I feel like I wanted experience in, I tried. And so now I want to follow in these ladies' footsteps. I want to try directing. I want to try producing. I want to show run at some point. You know, I want to just keep trying all the things. And I'm currently writing a movie for myself, which I hope gets made, but I don't know. But I wanted to try that. So I just, the process of it is where I get off. I'm super into comedy in all its forms, and making it and being part of processes is my actual dream. Nerdy. Mm-hmm. Nerdy level comedy stuff.
Yes. Well, Jana helped me realize some of my dreams. I mean, I feel like the last year and a half, I was able to direct 8 episodes of television, which is very tiring and very fun. But because of that, there's a lot of things I've been able to do that I didn't even dream of, because I didn't even know I was allowed to do that. Mm. And I think one of those dreamiest moments was Wide Net on Reservation Dogs, which was having 4 native leads as the main focus, as the characters, and have them doing sexual things and dancing and like bonding with sisterhood and all of these things. And so the thing is a lot of things that we dream of, for me anyway, are things that I want to do with my sisters in this industry. Mm-hmm. And it's a dream to write for my friend and my sister, Jana. And it's a dream to direct her and to see her take these stories and do magic with them in a way you couldn't imagine. And then it's a dream to work under people like Sierra and to learn from her. And so I think that there's a lot of dreams I've realized so far. But the thing that I want to do still, I am working on something in which there's a very messy female character. I just want her to be a mess. I want her to be toxic. I want her to drink. I want her to have sex. I want her to like deal with grief. I want her to just be really, really messy, like we all sort of were in our 20s. And so that's something that I'm excited to do more characters sort of in that place. And I think being able to see Native women just be messy and not be so like holy, because we're rugged and funny. And so I want to do stuff like that. But, you know, the dream is features. The dream is to have your own show. The dream is to continue to work with them and to work alongside and to direct and all of these things. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. I think just more. I want more of everything. Like, I hear the projects you guys are working on and I get so excited. And you guys are getting so busy that I'm like, I hope my dream is to make stuff that is shiny enough to attract both of you to work with me again. But yeah, no, we're in the process of like developing some comedies right now. I have a company called Booth Fee, which is based on like when you're a Native artist, you're just trying to make back your booth fee at an art market. So that's why we called that. And so really the goal now is to kind of try to partner and make more things, and then also usher in like all these like new people who are trying to make new things as well. I would love to direct. Show running, you know, TV is like a writer's medium. So I feel like in a lot of ways I've been able to learn so much from the directors that we've worked with and have that kind of vision. And then I'd really like to do like a period piece that isn't tragic. So like I want to do like whatever like our Hidden Figures is, or like something that's splashy, set in the 70s, hopefully about my mom. Like I want to do something that feels of a time and is sweeping and interesting and not necessarily like everybody dies and bad things happen. You know, I think we always think about like the Native people watching, you know, we are constantly sort of obsessed with that experience for them. And I think the more variety we can offer, like I freaking love Spirit Rangers. Like I love that show so much because we have kids. And but to watch my son watch that show and have it be so funny and have him be like, I'm Eddie the Turtle. Like by episode 3, he was like glimmered onto the character that he was. And to just, and to hear like Wes Studi play the son, and like you have all these like elders who've been doing it for freaking ever. I really want a show where there's these seasoned older actors who never got shots or never got chances to do different types of comedy, mixed with like these new young people who are doing stuff, mixed with like all these new, there's just so much new and old, and I just want us all to have like just more opportunities.
Hmm. Yes.
Oh.
All of that.
Well, folks, that's all we have for you for today. Thank you so much for being with us. Remember, you can watch all of the Rutherford Falls episodes on Peacock TV.
Huge thank yous to Santa Monica College and everyone there who made this whole series possible.
And thank you to the AMR team, Jonathan Stein, Max Levin, Teo Shantz, Lindsay Hightower, Darian Camarillo, and Charlie Stavich. So grateful for KP of Black Belt Eagle Scout for being our live music for the event, and to Sierra Sana for the beautiful episode artwork.
If you want to support the podcast, remember you can sign up on Patreon, which we appreciate so much, or, you know, write us a review on iTunes. That's really helpful. Or join us on the gram at AMR Podcast.
Also, a quick note that Matika's book, Project 562, Changing the Way We See Native America, is available for pre-order and comes out April 25th. You can find it wherever you buy your books. Go buy it.
Books.